Chapter 12. Whiskey Company Ready Room, Beta City. While he waited for the hour to pass, Lance took off his helmet and clipped it to his belt. He took a moment to signal Xena to add Basil to the authorized user list in his quarters, then sent a command to authorize the Augs to use the shower. He had Xena page Basil with orders to grab a shower, put on his uniform, and meet Lance in the company ready room. As he stood there, he wasn't quite sure what to say, but he knew that they were woefully undisciplined and should never have made it through their testing. If I didn't know any better, I'd think someone cheated the system, but that isn't possible. Drent, I wish Brayden was here to ask about this. It would explain how this band of ne'er-do-wells made it out of Nava School and how they had unlocked SA-71s during their little mutiny. Deciding that he first had to look the part to scare his rabble into shape, Lance placed himself at a rigid at-ease position and waited, knowing Xena would notate the exact time each cadet marched into the room. When there was exactly 15 minutes to the hour, Lance snapped to attention and marched smartly into the room. He briefly stopped to seal the hatch, locking the cadets in and any stragglers out, before he continued on towards the podium. As he was marching forward, Xena pinged him a note directly into the earpiece that still connected him to his suit's communication system while his helmet was off. Apparently, both Captain Gergona and Senior Veteran Sergeant Kata had watched his earlier introduction to his new command. Were likely still watching as well. He could only hope they appreciated his out-of-their-box thinking, because he was desperate to get through to these kids before he had to watch them face a Kull firing squad. While standing at a rigid parade rest, Lance began to address First Squad, knowing that Xena would have already connected him to the podium's communication relays. Every cadet would hear his words as if he were standing right next to them, screaming into their ears, and just maybe he'd finally break through their malaise, and he could transform them into warriors. First, we have a little matter of squad business to address. Who was it that orchestrated that failed mutiny against my lawful orders? You have exactly 10 seconds to respond before I call an executioner and retire the entire squad. Go! With exactly 1 second to spare, Cadet Haley Mason jumped to attention and sounded off with an encouraging amount of gusto and confidence. Sergeant Scipio, I organized and led the so-called mutiny. Nobody else is responsible for my actions, Sergeant. Lance waited, seeing if his silence unnerved her into saying more, but she was unshakable, and never so much as twitched a muscle as she awaited the death sentence she surely expected. This I can work with. When it was obvious that she wasn't going to crack under the pressure, he addressed the rest of his squad. Is that correct, First Squad? Did Haley act alone, or did someone else assist her? By Bardo, I hope these twerps get that this is a test of their unity and teamwork. The only way they succeed in this scenario is by failing in solidarity. When the silence from his cadets had told him all he needed to know, Lance decided to take the beast by the horns and address the assistant squad leader, Cadet Sergeant Fitzgerald Wyckoff, directly. Cadet Sergeant Wyckoff, is it true that Cadet Haley Mason led the mutiny by herself? Think carefully before you answer my questions. Cadet Wyckoff jumped to attention, though less rigidly than Cadet Mason had, with a self-assured cockiness that told Lance he often tried to charm his way out of trouble. That's correct, Sarge. Right on the money. Wyckoff never saw it coming, so confident was he that his charisma would save him. Without missing a beat, Lance pulled the Flintzer pistol out of the holster on his thigh and shot Fitzgerald in the head. This abrupt execution caused a rippled gasp around the room, as First Squad finally had one reaction that was unified. Apparently, that's what it takes to get everyone's attention. All right. For showing leadership and being willing to take ownership of her actions, Cadet Sergeant Haley Mason is now your new assistant squad leader and will assume Cadet Wyckoff's old job. Now for the rest of you, relax. I fired a gel round filled with a mild neurotoxin with extreme sedative properties. He'll wake up, demoted and hopefully humbled, as a rifleman and hotel fire team. Let this be a valuable lesson for all of you. Now it's time to suck it up and drive on. Lance took a moment to scan the room, glad that every cadet was accountable. Punctuality was not a bad starting point for an infusion of discipline. After taking a deep breath, he began his uphill battle against the complacency of these cadets. My name is Veteran Sergeant Scipio. You may call me Sergeant Scipio or Sergeant, but I will shoot the next fracker that calls me Sarge. Is that clear? When there wasn't an appropriately loud chorus of affirmation, he tried again. Apparently you don't know how this works. I ask the questions, you answer the questions honestly, and we all get along. Failure to do so ends up with disharmony, and you will suffer for it. So I will try again. My name is Veteran Sergeant Scipio. You may call me Sergeant Scipio or Sergeant, but I will shoot the next fracker that calls me Sarge. Is that clear? This time the message was received, and the entirety of First Squad jumped to attention and shouted out a rousing, "Loud and clear, Sergeant! Loud and clear!" Finally satisfied that they were picking up what he was laying down, Lance decided to move along to the rest of instruction. Man, I really ought to plan out my remarks and lessons next time. Just as Lance was about to continue with his introductory lesson into being a Marine, the squad again began to talk quietly among themselves as if he wasn't there. "This won't do. Things have to change or we all die," mused Lance. "The first order of business is to change the environment, make them fit into my world and not the other way around. But how? First get them out of their comfort zone. What should scare these kids more than anything else? Augs time. Okay, I've got these kids' number now. They belong to me." After realizing that they wouldn't listen until he forced them to, he sent a message to his newly appointed assistant squad leader, ordering her to restore some semblance of military order and discipline. Cadet Sergeant Mason tried. She made a valiant effort, but this group was incorrigible. "Okay, I gave them their last chance." After quickly telling Xena to provide him a targeting matrix for his squad, he pulled out his pistol and began shooting every talking cadet between the eyes. When the room was quiet, he went on to shoot anyone who hadn't remained at rigid attention as he addressed them. Once he had finished, he surveyed the room and was surprised that only 4 cadets remained conscious, though they had paled considerably since he pulled out his Flintzer pistol again. "Good. Let them always remember this day," he thought. He then had Xena pull up names for 3 of the cadets, as the only face he recognized was Cadet Sergeant Mason. Like magic, Xena seemed to know what Lance wanted without his asking. Her intuitive ability to know what he wanted, even before he asked, seemed odd to Lance because they hadn't worked together long. "I bet it was all that time in cryo-freeze," he decided. "She would have been able to study my full military file and whatever else she could glean off of my medical reports from the cryopod." "Lance, I have sent you the full military records of all of these cadets to your Amy for you to read at your leisure. However, in an effort at expediency, I will post a synopsis document you can read now onto your tax screen. Cadet Sergeant Mason, Haley. She is the youngest cadet in the squad at only 15, having been promoted out of the novice school 2 years early for her superior aptitude. She was rejected by other squads who felt that her age would lead to immaturity, potentially bringing down their unit score, possibly ending in them being chosen for the cull. Because nobody wanted her, she was assigned to First Squad, the land of misfit Marines. She was recently promoted to Cadet Sergeant by you and is now the Assistant Squad Leader for the First Squad, Whiskey Company, 8th Battalion, 6907th TAC Regiment. She's excelled at every military classroom subject she has been taught, though could use some work on her field craft. Cadet Lieutenant Sergeant Thorne, Crystal. She is your typical Marine, exactly what you'd want from an NCO. She is smart, dedicated, and overachieving, yet remaining one of the guys, allowing her to build the kind of relationship with her subordinates which inspires confidence and loyalty. However, her populist leadership style creates a discipline vacuum that requires a firm hand to counter. This is evident in the current standing of First Squad, Whiskey Company, 8th Battalion, 6907th TAC Regiment. This is a flaw in an NCO, but would be a perfect officer candidate if humans were eligible. While she knows this about herself, it is in her self-evaluations, she still strives to overcome her innate personality characteristics so she can become a competent NCO. Cadet Beatty, Frederick. He is the oldest G2 class cadet in the regiment, having started the novice school a year late due to a pandemic which swept the creches in transit from the abandoned dealer system. Normally, the entire creche would have been quarantined, and the survivors would have carried on with training. But his father earned some pull when he turned the tide against the Tursas in the successful rearguard action at the Battle of Gariculus. He then used his clout to save his son and the other creshlings living with him. Cadet Lieutenant Corporal Rochambeau, Charlotte. She is an atypical Marine cadet, prone to imaginatively reinterpreting orders, sometimes outright disobeying them. She is highly skilled in electronics, more so than any cadet to go through Beta City in recent memory. For all her computer skills and general techie behavior, she is still a Marine with all the baggage that entails. Her peers love her because of her hacking skills, and I believe that she is the one who hacked the cadets' SA-71s and allowed them to graduate from the novice school because that's the only way I can conceive that they made it through. This is definitely something you should investigate, quietly and unofficially, so you can clear any potential minefields. If we can turn this bitter Betty around, she will be an incredible asset to the squad and the regiment at large. Lance took a second to order Xena to make contact with the Hardit that ran the Augs crew before turning to address the four cadets in his squad who remained conscious. All right, cadets, you are the only four cadets in the entire squad who seem to possess a shred of military bearing. These sleeping frackers are going to be sent to work the mines or whatever the dirtiest job the Augsies do in Beta City. While they are gone for the next 7 days, you will square away the entire squad's Habdisk barracks, and then we will assist Augs Tech Basil in preparing the unit's new equipment. Report to the Augs Tech in the first section leader's barracks, and he will assist you in turning those dung heaps into military quarters. Let me stress, he works for me and as such reports only to me. You creshlings made the mess, you can dang sure square it away. Dismissed. The cadets, no doubt more scared than they ever had been at the prospect of being sentenced to time in an Augs labor camp, popped out a loud and sincere, "Yes, Sergeant," before scurrying out of the ready room and off towards their barracks. 2 hours later, Lance sat at the commander's podium in the company ready room, reading the files on his four remaining cadets, while he waited for the lead Hardit to report. He was so engrossed in the full records on Cadet Rochambeau that he missed the arrival of Senior Auxiliary Supervisor Selassie Jolmajotaja. She was nothing like the Hardits he remembered from Kalino. She looked grotesquely obese, slovenly, and was covered in old scars and graying fur. By Horden's hairy fanny, how did she ever rise through the Hardit ranks? The Hardit, clearly angry at being summoned by a mere human, reported her presence to him with all the disdain that her mechanical voice box could muster. "Excuse me, cadet, I am looking for whoever's in charge here. Don't dawdle, I'm a very important person and haven't got all day." Realizing that her calling him a cadet was a deliberate ploy to arouse his ire, Lance let it roll off his back and smiled. He briefly checked the Amy on his arm so he could find out to whom he was talking before replying. "Rest easy, Senior Auxiliary Supervisor Selassie Jolmajotaja. I know I look young, but as they say, the cream always rises to the top, eh? I can see you are a very busy person, so I will keep this brief. I was recently placed in charge of this squad of misfits you see unconscious around you. Clearly they've displeased me. This simply won't do. I would like to request that you and your brethren put them to work for the next 7 days as some of your Augsies. You can do everything short of kill or maim them so long as they are physically capable of becoming Marines still at the end. Have them clean the shitters or whatever unpleasant tasks you have that are even below your Augs crews. Is this something we could accomplish together? I'm sure I can arrange to send a case of hearted homebrewed grok to you, for your staff, of course, to show my appreciation." Selassie seemed to consider his offer, with a look in her three eyes that was so cunning, conveying such a craftiness that Lance immediately feared he'd underestimated her. Her reply moments later concluded the matter. He was about to be outfoxed by this wily creature, something she was clearly relishing. "Well, my young sergeant, I imagine I could be persuaded to have my people come up and put your unruly cadets to work. My overseers could help install some of that elusive discipline into these young ones, but surely one case wouldn't be enough to quench the thirst of all of them. Make it 10 cases, throw in some training munitions to help us frighten the poor creshlings, and we have struck a deal." After briefly trying to find a valid reason to deny her increased demands, when Lance had so much invested in the success of his squad, he gave in. "S.A.S. Selassie, the bargain is struck. I will deliver half now and the rest upon retrieving my cadets." Before he had even finished his last sentence, she was sending messages to her minions through the ready room's data terminal. When she had done, she disappeared out the door without even a nod of recognition. Realizing he hadn't specified who needed to arrange the transport of the unconscious cadets, Lance asked Xena to see what Selassie had communicated to her fellow Hardits. "Rest easy. The senior supervisor has ordered a crew of Augsies to report here and retrieve our wayward charges. I estimate that they should be here within the hour, well before the cadets wake up. I imagine the horror of waking up as an Augs, without knowing if it is permanent, will get your point across nicely." Chapter 13 Sergeant's Quarters. City Phase Unit 1, Hab Disk 612, Room 101. First Squad, Whiskey Company, 8th Battalion, 6907th TAC Regiment. While his squad was paying the piper in Augsland, Lance decided he needed to have a heart-to-heart with Cadet Lance Corporal Rochambeau. He was absolutely convinced that she was his hacker, and this was how this squad had graduated from the novice school, that she was also the one who had unlocked the full features of the SA-71. He took a second to ensure his room was spotless and that the attached office was pristine, lest he set a bad example. Once he was satisfied that his uniform and room were immaculate, he had Xena page his little wire monkey for their meeting. In the moments before Cadet Rochambeau got to his room, Lance had Xena prepare the electronic security measures, but ordered her to wait before initiating the program. He knew he had to give Cadet Rochambeau the chance to decline her right to have the proceedings recorded. Once she made the call, it would take mere seconds for Xena to wrap an electronic web around the room so tight that even God would struggle to eavesdrop. Before Lance had time to get bored with his preparations, Cadet Rochambeau knocked smartly on his door. He hit the button to open it, and she marched into the room, saluted, and reported in. She was shorter than the rest of her squad mates, at only 5'5", and weighed 123 pounds. Her hair was a coppery red that, along with her porcelain complexion, not only made her brilliant blue eyes stand out, but also further highlighted how petite she was. She looked like she'd blow away in one of the severe storms that Kalina was known for, but her records indicated a brilliant ferocity about her that made him think she was often underestimated because of her stature.
"Sergeant, Cadet Lance Corporal Charlotte Rochambeau reporting in as ordered, Sergeant."
Lance made her wait, pretending to be engrossed in a file he wasn't reading, for no other reason than to prove that he could. After a few moments had passed, he looked up, returned her salute, and nodded for the chair in front of her. She seemed to understand the intent, for she instantly sat down at a rigidly modified form of attention. "Cadet Lance Corporal Rochambeau, before we begin this official counseling session, I must advise you of your rights under the Human Marine Corps Code of Justice. You have the right to have these proceedings recorded and for everything to be strictly on the record. Do you understand these rights as I explain them to you?" With a visibly paler face and wobbly voice, Cadet Rochambeau spoke.
"Yes, Sergeant, I understand these rights, and decline to have the proceedings recorded."
Lance, however, was a stickler for protocol and procedure. "Ironic that I'm now the rigidly by-the-book jackass, given not long ago I was a jackass rifleman who just wanted to have fun." "Cadet Rochambeau, you are aware that by declining to record these proceedings, you waive any right to appeal the outcome of this counseling session." This time there was a noticeable pause, as the possibility seemed to weigh her down.
"Yes, Sergeant, I'm aware that by waiving the right to record these proceedings, I also forfeit the right to appeal."
Lance sat there stoically, not reacting, and simply waited. Will my non-reaction cause her to change her mind? How much effort do I make to allow her to reverse course? After giving it a few moments, he sent Xena the command to electronically isolate his office from the grid, thereby ensuring total privacy for their conversation. While trying to look severe, Lance began his discussion with a firm demeanor, trying to channel all of the instructors and sergeants he had ever worked for. "All right, now that the formalities are out of the way and the room is electronically secure, we have much to discuss. I'm aware that you have been hacking the White Knight databases. I'm also aware that you hacked the SA-71 rifles and unlocked features intended only for full Marines. Further, I know that you falsified the scores from the first squad that allowed you to graduate from novice to cadet. I could go on, but I believe that those are the highlights. What have you to say for yourself?" I wonder if she'll admit it the first time. Probably not. I wouldn't have in her shoes. Rochambeau looked even paler, causing Lance to idly wonder if there were any color brighter than her white alabaster skin with which to attribute her complexion. After taking a deep breath, "She is probably trying to calm her nerves. Yep, she's gonna lie to me." Cadet Rochambeau answered his inquiry.
"Sergeant, I don't know what you are implying, but I am an advocate of regulations and wouldn't..."
The anger which covered Lance like a shroud surprised them both, especially him.
"Cadet, you take me for an idiot!"
He paused, though his question was rhetorical in nature, taking a calming breath. "Remain professional. My discipline must be above reproach in order to instill it within these urchins.
Charlotte, I know you are the little wire monkey who has been waging digital warfare. Your hacking has kept your squad alive, and caring for your brothers and sisters is a great and noble thing. Caring for your peers is an especially worthy trait in a fireteam leader. If you exhibit that level of soldier care throughout your career, you will go far. However, you have broken so many regulations and laws that you could get the entire base culled. You hacked the White Knight Master Code, only way you could have accomplished the things you have. Bravo. Now it ends, or I will be honor-bound to report you to the proper authorities. I don't want to do that. You don't want me to do that. And so the only hacking you do going forward is under my direct orders. From now on, you only use your technical prowess for the betterment of the unit and the mission. Do you copy, Cadet? Lance was grimly satisfied with the progress he'd made with Cadet Rochambeau. Her face showed her comprehension. It was getting even paler, if such a thing was possible. She finally gets how dire her situation is, how precarious First Squad's very existence in the Human Marine Corps is. Why couldn't her other instructors accomplish this? Where have things gone so wrong since I was iced? I need to find this cancer and excise it, real quick, fast and in a hurry-like. Cadet Charlotte Rochambeau seemed to finally lose her formidable military bearing, and tears trickled down her face as she nodded.
Roger, Sergeant, I understand. I won't hack anything unless under your direct orders. I just... They're all family, sir. How could I let some of them fail out and get sent to toil as slaves under the Hardits? Do you know how badly the Augs are treated in Beta City, Sergeant?
With a gentle nod, Lance accepted her decision and made one of his own. He tried to convey his understanding of her motives and spoke in a soothing tone, like he might when coaxing a wounded animal. Right. Wipe away those tears and buck up. I have some good news for you, Wires. That's what I'm going to call you from here on out. I have a new AI for you. Her name is Alexa. She is a Cyber Scout model AI who has been enhanced and now has the full digital packet of AI subtypes. Treat her well. She once belonged to a friend of mine. Your old AI, pull it out of your Amy and turn it into me now. I will ensure that the records reflect your new AI. After the exchange, Lance gave her a parting order to resume cleaning the barracks so they would be ready for inspection.
You will handle updating the records, will you? Little ol' you, all by your lonesome.
As Wires stood, saluted, and then left the room, Xena treated Lance to a barrage of her finest snark. Chapter 14. 1 week later. Whiskey Company Ready Room, Beta City. After setting the time for his second attempt at a formal introduction to his new squad, Lance dressed in the duty uniform for the 6907th TAC Regiment. After pulling on his smart fabric trousers and throwing on an undershirt, he pulled on his top before lacing up his black spit-shined leather boots. He quickly donned his black beret before stopping to glance at himself in the mirror. His uniform was exactly as regulation prescribed for the 6907th TAC Regiment. Maroon-colored trousers with a solid black stripe down the side, a black belt and cargo pocket set at just above the knee. His blouse was maroon with black piping and accents, with the inverted V of his three stripes denoting that he was a sergeant, prominently displayed on the sleeve. Just above the V of the rank insignia sat the 8BN/6907RGT, his regimental assignment. Sewn onto the right collar of his blouse was a black WCO to represent his assigned company in the battalion, while the left collar had the 1 to represent his squad assignment, and his beret bore the regimental crest. Never imagined I would ever leave the 941st TAC Regiment. I thought I would live and die there with my brothers and sisters. This will take some getting used to. This time Lance reported to the ready room with Basil in tow in a similar uniform. Where Lance had rank insignia on his sleeve, Basil simply had the 8BN/6907RGT over an A to denote his auxiliary status. On Basil's right collar there was also the WCO, telling the world he was assigned a whiskey company, and the 1 sewn on to his left indicated that he too was assigned a first squad. But the flashing on his beret was bare, for Augsies, even on Kalino, weren't entitled to wear the regimental crest. Lance had planned on being 30 minutes early so he could gather his thoughts, but the cadets were waiting for him. It appeared that after having spent time under the loving care of SAS Selassie, First Squad decided that they wanted to become Marines after all. They must have skipped breakfast to arrive so early. This bodes well. As soon as he opened the door, the entire squad jumped to attention, and though the military maneuver was rusty and lacking in precision, it was more than made up with their enthusiasm. He nodded to Cadet Sergeant Mason, who was standing in front of the assistant squad leader's desk when he passed her. He glanced over at Basil, who seemed to remember more of his military bearing than First Squad ever had, and indicated he'd take the desk on the podium with him. After scanning the room, pleased with the effort to act like Marines, Lance broke the tension in the room with the order to be seated. Once the cadets were sitting at a rigid attention, he began his introduction and their daily lesson. "I'm Senior Veteran Sergeant Lance Scipio. You can call me Sergeant Scipio or simply Sergeant, but never Sarge. I've been brought to Beta City to revive tactical methods that the Marine Corps and all its infinite wisdom has lost to the ravages of time. As part of this change, I have moved into the sergeant's room in the command section's hab disk. Before you start snickering, breaking your bearing, I'm aware that you use these rooms as storage and as a shaggin shack. You wouldn't believe the amount of sanitizer I had to use to make that room livable. Gentlemen, even female Marines would prefer a little cleanliness and dignity when they choose to let you fill their voids. Cleanliness is next to godliness, my young creshlings. Auxiliary Technician Basil Terlore, who is assigned to help get all of First Squad's equipment up to par, will live in the Sergeant's room in the First Section Leader's hab disk. If he is in any way mistreated by members of First Squad, they will be dealt with by me, and harshly. Now, Augs Tech Basil, please stand up so they can see who they will report to with any equipment issues." There was only a brief hesitation. Clearly, Basil was surprised at being called out like this, before he jumped to attention. His bearing is everything the First Squad cadets should have been able to duplicate, though they made visible efforts today. As Basil stood rigidly at attention, Lance paced around the room randomly, inspecting the uniforms of his squad. They were clean and crisp, though this was more of a consequence of the nanites running through the fabric than anything the cadets did. Their boots, however, were great indicators of the cadet's self-discipline, because their presentation came wholly from the individual Marine cadet. In that arena, the cadets barely scored in the acceptable range for mid-level novice school cadets. "This hacking and cheating, it has been going on for a while, I see. I'm glad I found the computer whiz before the regimental folks did." After he was done letting the cadets sweat his next move, he promptly marched to the front of the room and resumed his lesson. "You must be curious as to what has changed, so I will tell you. We will teach you the use of combined arms for ground warfare and its real-world applications. We will cover the practical applications of void warfare in general, since it involves fighting from a sphere with a required complete 360 degrees of awareness, rather than on a plane such as you would from within a gravitational well. I will teach you the proper use of the Grenadier attachment on your SA-71s and assign a specific cadet to that role. Also, I will revive the SA-75HGX mobile mini cannon, which you'll refer to as simply the Mini. It is an automatic rifle which will be assigned to every fire team and allows our base combat unit to provide its own fire support. Think of it as a portable GX cannon or as an SA-71 on combat drugs. After reviewing your records, which were underwhelming, I have assigned cadets to various positions within the fire team. The ranks and positions assigned in this revised TO and E are not permanent. It's only yours until you die or I fire you, but that can happen at any time. Take a minute to familiarize yourselves with it so you pay a special attention to the correct instructions. Check your aiming now. You have a few minutes to read the new rank structure." Lance paced up and down the ready room, taking in the cadets' reactions as their new duties were assigned to them. None of the newly minted minis or grenadiers seem to realize the honor I've bestowed upon them, but they soon will if I do my job right. In the following weeks, months, and years of training, he would mold them into a well-oiled machine capable of reviving tactics long ago abandoned by his Marine Corps. Once he judged enough time had elapsed, he marched back to his podium and began addressing his cadets. "Some look bewildered, unsure what these new changes will mean, and that's good. They've gotten too proficient at manipulation." As Lance was returning to the podium at the front of the room, Xena pinged his individual comms to tell him that Command was again watching his performance. "Great. If I'd known I had an audience, I would have sold tickets." Once he was back in front of the podium, he resumed his instruction. "I'm sure many of you are now questioning the need for the tactical changes I am going to teach you. It is simple. You can't be all things to all situations. By specializing and then organizing in the fire team like I have, each fire team can handle a diverse range of combat scenarios. This integration makes you a more effective combat unit. Your diverse capabilities serve as a unique combat multiplier, one that is difficult to counteract. Or as my mama used to say, you don't want to be a jack-of-all-trades, yet a master of none. Again, after utilizing another pregnant pause, Lance concluded his lesson. Finally, if you successfully complete the prescribed course of training, you will be awarded your very own unit tattoo. By the confusion on all your faces, I realize that you are clueless on the privilege that said tattoo entails. It's something that you earn which links you to every Marine in the regiment that has come before you, and everyone who will come after you. I'm aware that this tradition died here, but we will revive it. The tattooing machine has been rebuilt by Basil and simply waits the opportunity to mark you as its own. Afterwards, every significant event, battle, or honor earned is added to your tattoo, telling the very universe that you are the 6907th TAC Regiment. Where are we going? Not quite sure how to reply, the squad gave an underwhelming reply of hurrahs, mixed in with shouts of Marine Corps. With absolute clarity, Lance realized they didn't know what he was asking of them. We're the 6907th TAC Regiment, and when someone shouts your unit designation, you sharply reply with our regimental motto. Lance resumed shouting his call in response encouragement, until the shout of 6907th was uniformly and enthusiastically met with a chorus of Forward to Victory. Chapter 15. Scrofa Island Outdoor Track, Tranquility 4. As the regimental cadets ramped up their training and the time to prove the worth of him and his squad drew near, Lance began to find sleep a futile nightly torture. He would toss and turn most of the night before waking up with a start, drenched in sweat, with hours to go before the new day dawned. Today he'd had enough, so he got dressed in his full-body athletic kit and slipped on his running shoes. Realizing that he didn't want to run alone, Lance had Xena ping all of the leadership and ordered them to meet him at the sally port to the planet above. His cadet NCOs had learned to expect these odd hours, so had proactively programmed their AIs to wake them up the minute his orders came through. He'd even heard that Cadet Corporal Lachlan Mayer had his AI send minor electrical currents into him to ensure that he never slept through one of his sergeant's off-hours training sessions. Confident that his cadets would be waiting, he stretched out and jogged to the sally port. After forming up the cadets into a modified formation, Mason stood at attention in front of her unit and crisply saluted Lance.
Sergeant, first squad detachment formed and ready. All present, Sergeant.
Lance returned a salute, acknowledging her report, before he addressed the first squad's NCO detachment. Cadets, I'm glad you chose to join in this impromptu leadership run. We will keep it relatively... Just as Lance was about to finish his sentence, massive bright flashes lit the night sky. The squad stood in shock as several flashes followed the first. Before he could make out what was happening, several balls of fire broke through the atmosphere, trailing a glowing smoke in their wake. They were what appeared to be asteroids, but there were several of them entering the atmosphere of Tranquility IV in a tight formation. The noise? My God, those are loud. By Horden's hairy fanny, they're kinetic strikes. That means those flashes were the orbital platforms being destroyed. Lance snapped an order at Mason to hurry her cadets back to barracks, and then tried to raise Company HQ to report in. Before he got through, however, he received a message from the captain updating him on the situation in the skies above. A minor-hearted revolt was going on, which would soon be put down. Unfortunately, they were able to use the Antilles Moon's mass driver to shoot containers full of ore down at Tranquility IV, using them like kinetic weapons. The note from Captain Gorgona simply read, "The revolt will be put down. Timing is on our side, so stand down." Not entirely satisfied with a message from his CO, Lance made a mental note to step up the training of First Squad. Never know when those Kreshlings might need to fight with turmoil like that brewing. Chapter 16. 2566 AD, Whiskey Company Weapons Range. Even after several months under Lance's command, First Squad had yet to fully grasp the uniquely abrasive style of his training. Rather than wait for the normal business day or to officially schedule any off-hours training, he preferred to keep them on their toes with unscheduled evolutions. When he had late night or early morning training, he preferred to wake them up in as many cruelly creative ways as possible to keep them on their toes. Sometimes that involved fireworks placed in metal trash cans, but today he chose to simply go from room to room while banging on the lid to a 55-gallon metal drum with a metal hammer. It was crude but effective, and sometimes he got the privilege of embarrassing various couples who were interrupted in states of disarray. Their mad scramble for clothing, an oddity as the Marines were an immodest lot, was highly entertaining. While he was making as much noise as possible, he would scream and name things to rouse them from their slumber. "Drop your cock and grab your socks," was one of the squad's favorites. It never failed to elicit giggles from the cadets, and today was no different. Immediately upon first squad's arrival in formation, after waking up and getting dressed, Lance began to lecture them, mirroring his own cadethood instructors. "All right, first squad, today we will be marching out to the company rifle range and begin your formal training on the SA-75 GX mobile mini cannon. While you were sleeping, you should have received the total instruction packet through your neural learning program. Your individual AIs were also updated and given all the relevant information on the new equipment and its tactical implications. To date, all you have had to do is learn the basics of moving and communicating as a unit in your new fire teams. Even still, you complain when you don't think I can hear. That's okay, that's what riflemen do, but make no mistake, you've had it easy since I wanted you to have time to gel as a unit. All you have had to do is eat, sleep, shit, and use up all my goddamn toilet paper." Having heard another expression from Lance that they'd never heard before, what they'd begun calling Lanceisms, the cadets completely lost their bearing and began laughing out loud. Lance, though not truly offended, marched over to the closest cadet and punched him in the gut. The rest of the squad, not wanting to be next, quickly shut up. "Now where was I? Ah, I remember. Boys and girls, today you begin the process to earn your tattoos. Today you will proceed to the Whiskey Company weapons range and begin practicing with your new weapon. You will assemble and disassemble it until you can do so in under 240 seconds to standard. Only after you can do this will you be able to fire the weapon under supervision. The first time you fire this weapon, you will do so without your AI assistance. Once you can do that to standard, we will let you and your AI tear up some targets, sending some sabos downrange. Keep in mind, you will be doing this with an audience. The rest of the veteran squad sergeants will be watching and potentially asking questions so that they can train their teams. At the end of weapons training, when we have all learned the capabilities of these new technical marvels, we will have combat maneuvers against third squad. You will win, or you will have one very angry sergeant kicking your drenting bums to Antilles and back. After the little party they had up there last year, that We Revolt, I hear they need new Oxys to clean and such. Any takers? No? Okay, then back to Marine work, creshlings. Now, are there any questions before we double-time it to the armory for weapons draw?" Unsurprisingly, Cadet Grenadier Frederic Batty had a question. If only others were as studious and dedicated to learning their craft. Might have to have him on the shortlist for potential promotions, should a vacancy present itself. Lance merely nodded and gave Batty the chance to ask his question. "Sergeant, when will the new Grenadiers get the same opportunity to become familiar with our new role? I realize that we've all fired them before, but we should still get training time." Once the new cadet Grenadier asked his question, with the other Grenadiers nodding excitedly, Lance decided to answer the question. "If I don't address this, they won't pay attention in training. It is more than clear that this was an organized attempt by all the Grenadiers and that Batty was merely the most confident of the group. Good. I was right to consider him for promotion. Besides, next week is our training exercise and I want to slaughter third squad." "Okay, I can see that you are all motivated and eager to know, so let me break your hearts gently. Don't worry, Batty, I know a certain cadet medic who can ease your fears and stroke your fragile ego. In an effort to expedite the training process, given that you are already intimately familiar with a grenade launching system attached to your SA-71, our commander has determined that neural learning will suffice. I have also seen to it that your AIs have been upgraded to facilitate this. That means your team will be relying on your innovation, ingenuity, and strategic thinking when we crush third squad next week. And team leaders, that means you too should study the materials provided. You're going to have to think on your feet for this. Just remember, why throw a stick when a tree will do? Go big and you get to come home. If we wanted to underexplode a target, we'd call in the spacers or some terrestrial army." After the chorus of hurrahs quieted down, Lance gave the cadets one last chance to ask questions before they went to the range and got to training. Unsurprisingly, Cadet Batty had another question. "Man, I don't know whether to be pissed or proud at the unity from the Grenadiers." "Okay, Cadet Batty, ask your question and make it a good one because it's the last one before we go shoot things." Without even breaking his bearing at the obvious signs of his sergeant's frustration, but he asked his last question.
Sergeant, that covers our gravitational portion of weapons training, but what about its practical application in the void?
Lance tried unsuccessfully to keep his pride in them from showing.
Another good question. Watch it, team leaders. It looks like Mattia's bucking for your jobs. To answer your question, we should be on track to begin void training with these new tactics next month. Given the hearted revolt on Antilles last year, Command wants us ready to deploy as soon as possible. Who knows? You Kreshlings might just graduate early and get to play Marine if things escalate.
While his words implied a serious threat, his laughter told them that he thought the chances of that were slim. If he thought Antilles was an isolated incident, then who are they to disagree?
Chapter 17. 1 week later, 6907th TAC Regimental Hall. The cavernous regimental hall was full of excitement and abuzz with nervous energy. The only whiskey company would be participating in the first cadet combat training exercise using the new equipment and small unit tactics. The entire regiment had turned out. Further, it was rumored that the mock battle would be broadcast to the entire base, possibly to all of Tranquility. While this wasn't quite as big of a deal as the semi-annual Sendence Tournament, the White Knight Marine Corps version of the Olympics, it was close because everyone was anxious to see what all the to-do with the new equipment and tactics was about. As the regiment relaxed in their seats, which was as close to lounging as they'd get outside of their habdisk rooms, the door gong sounded, alerting them that an officer was present. In a flash of movement, the entire regiment jumped to attention, and a stillness settled over the hall. Colonel Marchuka strode into the room with a commanding presence, exuding confidence that inspired awe and loyalty, followed by his staff. Upon reaching the front podium, Colonel Marchuka nodded to his senior veteran sergeant, Sergeant Bashiri Sane. With a voice firm enough to make his fellow training sergeants proud, Sergeant Sane sounded off with a hearty, "Be seated!" After briefly checking the regimental status report provided to him by his AI, he executed a smart-about-face and saluted Colonel Marchuka.
"Sir, the 6907th TAC Regiment is all present and accounted for, sir."
Colonel Marchuka, ever the performer, paused for a moment and scanned the room before he returned the salute. Once Sergeant Sane had taken his seat, the colonel began to address his troops.
"Marines, today is a momentous day for our regiment. Today we discover whether our skills as Marines, our years of training and selective breeding, stack up against the more barbaric and diabolical nature of our ancestors. Sergeant Scipio, a throwback to an earlier era, has been called forth from antiquity to train our cadets in his ancient methods. We will let him lead us in this Nighthummer-orchestrated symphony of carnage, one that they claim will lead to our salvation in some great battle ahead. A battle, they foretell, will be decided by the skills of the Marines and this regiment."
It took a full minute for the thunderous roar of approval to die down, allowing the colonel to continue his speech.
"Now that the cadets have finished the terrestrial phase of their training, we will test it in combat against the cadets of Chaos Company, 16th Battalion, 828th TAC Regiment. For the honor of the 6907th, the Marines and Whiskey Company will sally forth and lead us into victory. Colonel Zabik from the 828th and I have talked with the base commander, and he assures us that the winning regiment automatically gets exempted from the cull. This is serious. We will win. It is what we do. It is who we are. I have a staff meeting with General Skorix Toma, but Sergeant Scipio will come up and outline the rules of engagement. So, cadets, listen to your sergeants, pay attention and do us proud. Forward to victory."
At the conclusion of his speech, Colonel Marchuka snapped to attention, saluted the regiment, and prepared to march out of the regimental hall. Once he made the first gesture of forward momentum, Sergeant Sane jumped to attention and shouted out a hearty, "Attention on deck!" to the regiment, though this was unnecessary since they were already in motion. Once the colonel had marched out and his absence from the room was confirmed, Sergeant Sane called out for the regiment to be seated and nodded to Lance, letting him know it was time. Lance knew that this was his moment in the sun, his chance to prove his value and give worth to the lives of his lost friends. So he stood straighter and mustered every ounce of military bearing that he had. When he marched to the front of the regimental hall, he looked every bit the young warrior, someone Sergeant Fontaine would be proud to call her Marine. Channeling the Marines from his past whom he respected the most, Lance took a deep breath and gathered his thoughts, letting the pregnant pause build the suspense for those waiting on him. After audibly clearing his throat, signaling for the regiment to quiet down the murmuring, Lance began. "Marines of the 6907th, this is when we officially exempt our senior cadets from the cull. We will beat those creshlings in the 828th and send them home to mommy crying for their mother's milk. Not only will we will win decisively. All we need from the boys and girls of Whiskey Company is to remember your training and follow the orders of the sergeants appointed over you." Again, there was an outburst of spontaneous cheering that took a few moments to calm down before Lance could continue his pre-combat instructions. "Right, settle down, Marines, settle down," he shouted, desperately hoping they would let him finish this so he could get the company ready for what lay ahead. "This battle will be a difficult one. We'll be assaulting the 828th TAC Regiment in the ancient city just over the Oconee Mountains that surround Lake Sarpedona. We'll be engaging the cadets of Chaos Company, 16th Battalion, 828th TAC Regiment. They will be utilizing the tactics which existed prior to my revival to defend the old city, and we will assault the position with a new fireteam tactics. The combat games will be judged by a joint team of officers and NCOs from both regiments, so anyone wishing to volunteer should query Sergeant Sane at the conclusion of this meeting. The rules are simple. Chaos Company wins by holding the position for 2 days. We win by taking the city. Both companies will be issued the standard smart fabric field uniforms and our basic kit. Neither will have access to AIs nor combat armor, and we will fire a mix of non-lethal munitions to be decided by the senior NCO in each company. The judges will determine who lived and who died. We will have a brief moment to salvage any of the gear from the deceased before we continue the mission while the newly deceased await us in an isolated holding area. Each unit will have access to 4 AUGS techs to assist, though Captain Bulverk Arahi of Chaos Company sneered at the idea and at the 6907th, and that just won't do. In fact, he will be personally overseeing the battle plans for his company. I have it on good authority that there will be a bounty paid to the cadet who fires the shot taking him out of the games. Do not let that make you reckless. Stay focused and disciplined. Finally, I have been given tactical command of the situation so I can better demonstrate the capabilities of the tactics I was taught. It is my privilege, however, to inform you that Captain Gergona will personally lead the final assault that crushes those frackers in the 828th, so she can personally claim the sidearms from their officers and hang the unit flag from this very hall. Forward to victory!
Chapter 18. The next day, Whiskey Company staging area. It was 4 hours before sunrise, and the cool night air lent a sense of somber foreboding that permeated the formation. Failure wasn't an option and could mean expulsion from the Marine Corps into the drudgery of AUG status. The entire company stood at attention, weapons at present arms so Captain Gergona could inspect each rifleman, though how familiar she was with the new technology remained unknown. Each cadet in that formation knew that in the ruins of Oconee City, a location that predated the White Knight conquest of the planet, their nemesis in the 828th were also hard at work. Winning the war game was now more than a matter of pride. It was life or death in the cull. While cadets rarely died as a direct result of combat training exercises, this one would have very definite real-world implications for their parent regiments. It wouldn't be the rubberized bullets, the knockout gas, or the neurotoxic gel rounds that killed the cadets, but the cull that came afterwards. Unlike most formations, this one had an AUGS tech standing at the end of each squad, carrying the toolkit which was now a part of their standard equipment. More than anyone, they stood out, for each of them carried themselves with a pride that was rare for a cadet, and unheard of from an AUGSy. Their uniforms were identical to that of their cadet comrades, a change that was hated by the officers of Beta City, but worshipped in the city's bowels where the Augsies toiled and suffered. In an effort to ensure everyone was ready, making the captain's inspection a formality, Lance and the other 3 squad leaders had performed their pre-combat inspections before they boarded the Stork shuttle that brought them to the staging area. Once they arrived, the NCOs from Whiskey Company quickly ensured that all of the gear and equipment remained secured, preventing anything from interfering with their ability to move stealthily. Nothing could be allowed to clink, clatter, or reflect light. While this was easier for Marines in the standard fatigues, having fewer reflective surfaces, the formality of the inspection remained.
After the commander was satisfied with the status of her command, she turned to Lance and nodded for him to continue. He knew it must gall her to have a human sergeant leading the show, so Lance vowed to make every effort to not pour salt on the wound. Never too late to learn to play the game, I guess, but I really hate that we have to. Why can't everyone just stow their egos and let us worry about beating our enemies? If only I could be an officer or Sergeant Fontaine, things might be different. Clearing his throat, Lance marched purposefully to the front of the formation and saluted Captain Gergona before reporting in.
Ma'am, Sergeant Scipio reporting in to the captain as ordered, ma'am.
After she casually returned his salute, he quietly addressed his intentions to her so she could give the orders. Lance could only hope that this would be what was needed to salve her pride, though he knew that only through victory would the illusion he was attempting to create be enough. He quietly asked her if they could have a conference of all the squad leaders so he could present his plan to the commander. I really should make a mistake so she can correct me and save even more face, but will it be too obvious and instead insult her? When all of Whiskey Company's command element were there, Lance handed Sergeant Isabella Mayer a hand torch, then squatted down and drew a quick sketch of the battlefield in the dirt. He didn't bother to pause to ensure that the rest of the sergeants and his commander were familiar with the field, since he knew they used this same field every year. Normally, this field exercise was used to see how the cadets fought when the battle was unwinnable, though whether or not they realized it was unwinnable was up for debate. Deciding that he had better get on with it if he was going to have time to get his audacious plan into place, he jumped right into the meat of his plan. All right, I won't sugarcoat this. You use this field to create an unwinnable battle space. Those Kreshlings in the 828th TAC know that, so they'll be overconfident. I'm gonna have to drop a bomb on you, though, because this naturally fortified city is in fact very beatable. As Lance took a breath, he could see the disbelief on the faces of his peers, and worse on his commanders. I guess I'm gonna have to really sell this. When Lance resumed speaking, he tried to be as blunt as possible to break through their preconceived notions. When I learned of this exercise, I began to study the terrain, not the maps available in the database, though I studied those too, but the actual physical terrain. I have been conditioning our regiment to run in those altitudes as well, since we don't know which company would get assigned to this combat training exercise. The river is fordable in two places, each one in range of the flanks of the abandoned city. The rear forest can be breached, but we'll have to trust our land navigation skills to get us through in time to assault the rear. They'll expect us to assault from the front, so that will be the largest feint, but the main assault will be through the mountains. After scanning their faces, seeing the uncertainty, Lance took a breath to calm his flagging spirits. I don't think they're sold yet. I will just have to lay it all out there, quickly, before I lose them. There are many smaller trails throughout those mountains. You all know them. Yes, they are too small for a company to pass through, but if we split the main assault into several smaller columns and converge on the clearing just to the rear of their fortified front, we will have them. We will roll their flank, and then it'll be like shooting fish in a barrel. The key here is timing. Before we march, we'll set a timer on our aimies, and from there, it's up to the NCOs to keep us on track. When the clock ticks zero, the river and rear feints raise hell, the frontal assault flank can make some noise afterwards, and when they're scurrying to respond, we roll into them. I call my plan Operation Gunstrike because we only get one shot at this. There is no plan B. This time when Lance scanned their faces, he could see a glimmer of hope. Yes, the others probably know of these paths, but given the lack of independent thought, it hasn't occurred to them to split their forces. Okay, now that you're all sold on the plan, let's divvy up the tasks. Sergeant Tendaji Conte will lead the first section of the third squad to either one of the river fords and will be the feint and force element for that flank. If you have your best riflemen snipe the enemy, it might add authenticity to the assault. Further, you'll have your grenadiers aim to cause chaos and confusion instead of merely taking out targets. We want them off their game, but by all means take a few out of play as well. And when you assault, make a long, thin front to convince them there are more of you. For the rear flanking element, that will be led by Sergeant Isabella Mayer. Mayer, you'll lead the first section of your fourth squad through the woods, paying close attention to your compass. And get to the rear in time to shock the hell out of them. Who knows, you might have a straight shot through the city and into their rear. If the opportunity presents, use it and snipe their officers, sergeants, and go down the chain of command from there until the latrine digger is leading them. It's a long shot, but mainly you're there to raise a ruckus. The frontal assault feint and force will be led by Sergeant Mosio Keke, include all 32 of our minis.
When they're throwing sabots downrange, those fracks in the 828th won't know it isn't all of us.
This will confirm their idea that the main assault is the frontal one. To support this assault, three of our Augs techs will be there, Holly, Tice, and Jolon. The other Augs tech, Basil, will stay with the main body just in case any of our other weaponry malfunctions. The other Augs techs will keep our automatic rifles in play and the enemy's heads down. By all means, Sergeant Okeke, take out any of the targets you can in the process. Finally, the remainder of the company will march through those mountains like their arses were on fire and roll the flanks of our enemies. The key is timing, timing, and timing, combined with a synchronized timer. That's the plan. Any questions? When Lance was done giving his battle plan, Captain Grigona spoke up to voice her opinion before anyone else could. It was clear she wanted to reassert her authority and thus ignored the precedent of letting the pre-battle strategy discussion happen from the most junior to the most senior. In theory, this was to assure that the lower-ranking sergeants didn't give the opinions of their superiors merely to curry favor, but instead actively engaged in the discussion. However, the current level of indoctrination meant that few Marines thought for themselves anymore. Sergeant Scipio, I applaud your plan, but don't think I don't know that you left that gaping error for me to fix. Damn it, I'm a Marine officer, not some creshling you need to coddle. That said, there's one minor flaw with the plan as you presented it. Sergeant Mayer's rear attack won't work because those are dense forests, and without the benefit of an AI to navigate, it's risky. The compasses available are too susceptible to the magnetic variations on Tranquility for it to work, so you'd have to line of sight the march. You'd have to do that from the outer edge of the forests through to the other end. It can be done, but not in the 2 days allotted. You're gonna have to pull that feint, but if you put it as a separate unit, which will also attack from the Dynia River, that will lend credence to the idea that it's a feint and there will be a brief window where they'll expect us to assault from that front. They can each use one of those two fords and keep the enemy worried about what's going on there. We'll have to capitalize on that window and assault the front flank, forcing them to choose. When the time is right, we have the minis charged to keep Chaos Company busy. The automatic riflemen will hate us, but Sergeant Okeke will have to charge the front and hold the assault long enough for us to engage. How do we keep them in the fight long enough for the main body to roll the flanks? Charging across that open field would be suicide. This time Lance looked chastened, having not expected her to see what he had done by giving her a flaw to fix in his plan. I knew she'd pull the rear assault, but I'm surprised that she chose to put them at the Dynia River flank. I figured she'd pull them back to the main body. Ma'am, we have the three Augs techs fire the grenade launcher on their SA-71 carbines at designated points to create craters for us to leapfrog across. All of the rain we've been having has weakened the ground in several areas, and we exploit it. Yes, I know the Augs aren't Marines, but there's nothing in regulations, past or current, that says they can't be armed. When ready, we have them create the craters needed to keep enough mini-gunners in the fight to keep Chaos Company focused on the enemies in front of them. Once we start rolling into them, it'll already be too late. Ma'am, it was my intention for you to lead the final push into the soft underbelly of the 828th. Maybe claim some trophy for your wall off their commander. But Lance waited to see if his commander would accept the olive branch he was offering her. He subconsciously tensed and untensed his muscles in a self-soothing ritual he'd learned as a novice. Rather than answer, Captain Grigona simply grunted before giving him a nod full of hidden meanings and undertones he didn't want to get into. Chapter 19. Old Oconee City Courtyard. Chaos Company. 16th Battalion. 828th TAC Regiment. Once the Stork shuttle dropped off Chaos Company into the courtyard in the middle of the ancient city, Captain Bulverk Arahi called his sergeants and officers to him. When he scanned the faces of his sergeants, he saw the same lust for victory which possessed him, and smiled to himself. He nodded to each of them, waiting for the Stork to take off before he even attempted to speak, noting in amazement how loud the shuttle was without the noise buffering of his combat armor. After the Stork was out of earshot, he began to address his Marines. The plan is rather simple, since the only avenue for their assault, the front, is already fortified by our predecessors. Within 2 days, depending on when they decide to charge to their defeat, we will have wrapped up this battle and the 6907th will rue having tinkered with their Augs pets and new toys. When the sergeants of Chaos Company stopped laughing, sneering at their peers who'd become their adversaries, Captain Arahi was able to begin anew. We know where they'll assault, because this position is normally led by instructors to test the cadets, and we've all either fought here or read the after-action reports. The whole premise of this exercise is that it's unbeatable and intended to teach the cadets humility as their betters crush them. Normally, they're only judged on how they lose, but the 828th is going to be judged on how many we let live through the event. Knowing this, we can assign minimal support to our flanks and rear. I've assigned 4th Squad to serve as our flank guards and mobile reserves. Their terrain provides natural protection, so they'll be there simply to repel their feint and force attacks. Sergeant Kobe Height, you can even use your troops to have fun crushing the foe strikes, since we know that's all they are. In fact, I'm ordering you to kill every one of them. I suspect they'll try feinting from across the river, but if they try swimming it, they'll be sitting ducks for you to squash. Since we are without comms, if something major happens, send a rifleman as a runner to deliver the message. Taking a deep breath, feeling confident in his inevitable victory, Captain Arahi paused and let his plans sink in. This should be a crushing run for these Marines and cadets. He was shocked when Sergeant Height, his 4th Squad leader, spoke up in what he'd intended to be a solo operation. Sir, with all due respect, shouldn't we follow the standard protocol and have a squad cover each flank while detaching a section to serve as the mobile reserve under the XO's command? These fracks in the 6907th are fighting funny, so let's be ready for whatever they might do. For all we know, they'll charge us naked and try humping our legs while we stand around in shock at the audacity of their play. I wouldn't... Sergeant Height wasn't given the chance to continue his sentiment, but was instead cut off by his commanding officer. Sergeant, I know you're no coward, so I'm going to stop you from sounding like one. They can't breach those forests, cross that mountain, or ford that river with neither AIs nor combat armor. Trust me, young one, humanity just isn't capable of it, so go position your cadets as instructed. One section on each of the impassable flanks with your command section and remaining one as your mobile reserve. Your only job is to keep their feints in force out of our lines. Can't have them mucking up my victory. Now go get into position and wait for the victorious conclusion to this exercise. Dismissed.
Chapter 20 Whiskey Company's Feint in Force. Movement to Position. Before he went on,